Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, Spider, he is our hero. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. Hey, everybody. Quick spider check.
Spider right. check?
Yeah. Are there spiders on your body?
I sure hope not.
I don't think so.
I've got 3 ticks, but no spiders.
Oh.
So I'm not arachnid free. No, just kidding. I don't. Only ticks I have are verbal. What? So, yeah. No
I
spiders.
I see no spiders on your body.
Thank you.
Couldn't find any on mine either.
Yeah. Which is that is something of a comfort. Why do you ask?
Well, we had to establish that before we could move on. So, quick, round the table. How do we feel about spiders?
Generally in favor. There are a couple of exceptions that wig me out. Lauren?
I like them.
You like them?
I do. I find them fascinating and cute.
I appreciate them very much cognitively, but I think that they are the physical embodiment of fear.
I am designated as the person who takes care of any sort of spider incident in our home.
Spider incident.
Also, any other type of creepy crawly sort of thing. So spiders are just one form. I would say bugs, but of course then I would offend all people who are true lovers of spiders, which are of course arachnids.
Right.
But most of the time I just capture them. I do a capture and release program because I think spiders are incredibly helpful. So I don't like to extinguish their little lives.
Well, if you don't like your entire body being covered in insects, you should appreciate spiders.
Certainly.
It's one of my hobbies, not being entirely covered in insects.
Another fun fact, I get pedantic about the arachnid distinction, too. I just can't deal with it. A while back, there was an AP, an Associated Press story going out that was just some little fluff piece about there were some children visiting the office of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and it said that the governor smashed a spider in front of the students. That was the story. But it called it a spider, and then a paragraph later referred to it as an insect.
Oh.
But not the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's like saying a mammal and a bony fish. They're like separated by that much distinction
so
taxonomically.
I think the headline should have been Politician Christie in between bridge conspiracy theories squishes a possible insect / arachnid. Details to follow when we get more on this story. This is complicated. Here are two specific types of spiders that do give me a little bit of the willies when I look at them. Or at least pictures of them. I have not seen either spider moving around in person.
But you've probably eaten both of them.
Well, I don't know. The curved spiny spider is native to Asia, and I have not yet made my way there. That doesn't mean that I couldn't have possibly encountered one some other way. But
or bits of one in pieces of your food somewhere.
It could be, yeah. Curved spiny spider.
That's the actual name, curved spiny.
And we have a picture in our notes, which I realize not terribly helpful for you listeners out there. But the picture, it looks almost like the body shape is almost triangular. And then at the base of the abdomen are these long horns that extend outward. And that's actually a female. The males do not have the horns.
It's a little bit like a wishbone with a spider attached.
Yeah.
I was going to say it looks like Tim Curry in Legend.
Right. Yeah. in spider form. Right.
With the horns.
Oh, I do not want spider Tim Curry.
No,
everything Tim Curry.
It only chooses insects, not scenery.
Okay.
Then I have the ravine trapdoor spider, which, Joe, before the podcast started, you said this thing doesn't even look real. It does look kind of weird because if you were to view the spider, let's say it's just crawling around on the ground, you were viewing it from above, it looks like someone has cut its abdomen in half. Like it's just a flat-ended abdomen as opposed to a rounded one.
Yeah, on the back of its abdomen, it's just this flat disc with a design that looks like one of the Dharma Initiative logos from Lost.
Yeah, it looks kind of like it could be a poker chip or a coin even.
And yeah, that if yeah.
It, and the thing is, this is a trapdoor spider. It digs a burrow and it crawls down in it. So if you were to actually see one, you would be more likely to see its rear end, that flat rear end, and think, hey, that looks neat. I should pick that up. And then immediately regret your decision. These are native to the state we live in. These are native to Georgia. And if you've never seen a picture of one, like I said, if you look at what it looks like, it's fake. In fact, I remember seeing comments on a blog post about these things where
shopped.
One of them
Photoshop.
Or one of them said, no, that's a spider that was injured by being cut in half and then it healed. You should be ashamed of yourself. And I was like, no, dude, this is actually the way these things look in real life.
We'll try to remember to post some pictures on social.
Yeah, when this podcast goes live. At any rate, yeah, there's some spiders that kind of wig us out.
Yeah, but we're not just here to talk about the future of getting the willies. We're here to talk about science and technology. So I think we should discuss how spiders fit into our future, specifically how they're going to be inspiring technology that matters to us.
Ah, so we're talking about biomimetics again.
That's right. So we've established that spiders are very important to us in a natural way.
You absolutely.
Know, cleaning up insects in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. But by looking at natural designs that we find in the organic kingdoms, we can actually see, hey, you know, nature's been working on this design for a long time. There's no shame in sort of getting some inspiration from what's already been done.
Sure, especially when, you know, you get something as completely effective as, for example, spider silk.
Yeah, now this is the main focus of this podcast is spider silk. Now, we're not saying that spiders don't have a myriad of other incredibly amazing attributes and features, but spider silk alone is phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, spider silk is, I will say, completely amazing. So it's very tufted and ductile. It's able to withstand enormous stretching pressure before it breaks. Mm-hmm. So according to some accounts, spider silk, you can stretch it out by about 40% of its length without it snapping.
That is absolutely amazing. I mean, we talk about tensile strength, which is that ability to withstand that pulling force before it snaps. And the fact that this has such elasticity makes it an incredible material.
Well, yeah, and it's the elasticity paired with how strong it is for its weight and size.
Right.
So I was actually reading a really funny paper online. So have y'all seen Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, not some other Spider-Man 2.
This isn't the one where he disco dances down the street.
No. Tobey Maguire.
Three.
Oh, thank goodness.
Molina as Doc Ock.
Right. Brilliant performance, I would say.
Right, wonderful. Yeah. So Doc Ock is fighting with Spider-Man on top of a train, and he basically hits the switch and throws the train out of control. You know, there's no brakes, and it's barreling down toward the end of the line.
Right, and since Spider-Man is not Superman, he actually wants to save people and not just let rampant destruction rain down upon poor average mortals.
Right, I think you're referring to Man of Steel,
yeah.
Not Superman in general.
No.
But, yeah, Spider-Man cares about people. So he wants to stop the train.
Right.
How's he going to do it? Well, he tries a few things. He tries to sort of brace against the tracks, and that doesn't work.
Right.
So then he gets the idea. He puts his body out on the front of the train.
Right.
And he shoots spider webs out into, you know, he can shoot the webs out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And he shoots them out so that they attach to the buildings he's passing by as he goes. And this forms a kind of V-shaped rubber band sort of tensile strength to press back against the force of the train as it barrels forward.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, he does manage to stop the train.
Yeah, it would have been kind of a bummer if all of his efforts had failed and that people just plummeted to their death or something.
Sure, but, you know, many times in superhero movies, superheroes do things that don't necessarily have anything to do with physics at all whatsoever.
Right, so
yeah.
Could this actually be something? Let's say that we were able to scale up the spider's silk. Is that even remotely possible?
Yeah, based on a paper I read, yes. I was actually reading this paper in the Journal of Physics Special Topics, which is an undergraduate journal run by the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Leicester. And by the way, this journal is delightful. I can't wait to read more of it. I've never discovered it before, but it's obviously not going to be like a top resource for groundbreaking research, but it's more full of kind of fun and weird topics,
mm-hmm.
like science fiction-based things and you know, what if we wanted to offset global warming by moving the Earth farther away from the sun? How much farther would we have to push it back in its radius?
See, these are cool questions. I mean, obviously there are no practical answers here because that's not something we could easily
do. It's all just
do.
Kind of estimating, but using what knowledge we do have to come up with interesting answers to weird questions.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
And so I really like it. And anyway, this one paper was called Doing Whatever a Spider Can by Brian Forster and Stone. And they calculated the force that would have been required to stop a train, as Spider-Man does in the movie. And then they compared that to the resistance force that could have been created by real spider webs, assuming proportional scaling. And they concluded in the end of the paper that if Spider-Man's webs were proportionally as strong as real spider silk, they actually should have been sufficient to stop the train, as depicted in the movie.
See, this is incredible. I mean, it's just, it does demonstrate how amazing spider silk really is. And also, this is, you know, that was key to the formation of the mythology of Spider-Man. I mean, the whole point was that the silk that Peter Parker creates is supposed to mimic what spider webs are naturally capable of doing. And even back when Spider-Man was being created, everyone was pretty aware of the fact that spider silk is really strong stuff, particularly when you take into consideration how thin that those individual strands tend to be.
Right.
So, I mean, it's great to see that not only was this sort of common knowledge, not only did it bear out, but it shows that this was actually not necessarily plausible, but a possibility. If you were able to scale that up, it would in fact have been sufficient to stop that out of control car.
Yeah. So I was interested in finding out, well, what is the toughest known spider silk? It's actually not just the toughest known spider silk, but it's the toughest known biomaterial.
Huh.
It's a form of spider silk that comes from the Darwin's bark spider, the Cheirostris darwini. That's of Madagascar, and it's a spider that makes silk that's up to 10 times tougher than Kevlar fibers. And toughness is the amount of kinetic energy a material is able to withstand without fracturing. In a 2010 paper in PLOS1, the authors discussed how they identified the spider as a good candidate for especially tough silk by observing how it created gigantic orb webs that were like up to 2.8 square meters, which is more than 30.1 square feet.
That is terrifyingly enormous.
Yeah. Gigantic spider webs suspended over water sources like streams and rivers. So you can imagine.
So they catch things like seals and deer.
Yeah, they catch the flying fish. No, I think they were catching insects coming up off the water.
Sure.
And the authors point out that silk of this kind would be a great inspiration for incredibly tough biomimetic materials.
Mm-hmm.
So there are all kinds of things we could use spider silk for if we had enough of it in situations where we need materials that are very light and very strong and very elastic.
Okay, so this has enormous potential, but I think that, I mean, clearly what all of us are thinking about here first is clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can make you a really, really lightweight bulletproof vest or something like that. Or you can make
I mean like fashion.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I want a spider dress.
Well, you're in luck. And all you need to do is break into a museum and steal it, because there has actually recently been made an entire garment, actually two whole garments, made from spider silk. So in 2009, Simon Pierce, who is a British art historian and textile expert, and Nicholas Godley, an American fashion designer, revealed the result of this textile experiment they'd been working on while they were both living on the island of Madagascar. Again, same place as the Darwin's bark spider. And this was a spider silk cloth. Now, it wasn't made by the Darwin's bark spider. It was made by golden orb spiders of Madagascar, and they've been known to produce very brightly colored yellow silk, this beautiful golden hue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the project started in 2004. They had the help of a team of 70 workers who collected wild spiders for the project, and then another dozen workers who harvested the silk with hand-powered extraction machines.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
The silk extraction machinery was actually inspired by a similar system more than 100 years old, which the French missionary Jacob Paul Cambouet used to harvest filaments for spider silk textiles around the turn of the last century, so around the year 1900 in Madagascar. But coming back to this project, the recent one, over a period of 4 years, they were able to spin the silk into thread and produce an 11-foot long by 4-foot wide piece of cloth out of spider silk.
Wow.
It's bright yellow. It's kind of strange to imagine handling.
I just imagine incredibly exhausted spiders being very, very proud of their work.
Yeah, you'd be pretty on target there, at least about the exhausted part. So producing spider silk is not easy. So we can make silk from silkworms. That's not that much of a problem.
Well, not if you're a person. But have you ever asked a silkworm how they feel about
it? It's true. No one knows what it's like when you're a silkworm.
Well, you know, but silkworm are relatively docile creatures.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, they basically just hang out being worms and produce the silk stuff. Spiders, as it turns out, are less friendly in a farm environment.
Especially to each other. So spiders are cannibals.
They're also really aggressive, aren't they, and territorial?
Well, some are. And, yeah, you can't pin spiders up together because after the work is done each night, they'll eat each other. So apparently Piers and Godley tried to create a reusable spider farm at first, but I read an article for The Economist where Piers explained that they'd have a collection of 500 spiders that would cannibalize itself down to 50 or so over the course of a few days.
Oh, you know, I think if Ford had to work with these kind of problems, we never would have had an assembly line.
Yeah,
just saying.
True. If the machinery ate itself,
or the workers.
Yeah.
Right. So apparently, in the more final version, the project involved constantly releasing spiders and then catching new ones.
That's a very work intensive project.
Exactly. Apparently, they ended up using more than 1 million wild spiders for the production of this one cloth. 1,063,000 to be exact.
You got to figure some of those were recaptures.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, probably.
Some of those
probably.
Spiders are like, oh, not again.
So the cloth eventually went on display in the American Museum of Natural History in 2009. And people say it has really unique tactile characteristics, like it feels vaguely sticky, and that the cloth threads are both very, very light and very, very strong.
I don't think I want sticky clothing.
Well,
I work pretty hard at my clothing not being sticky.
Somebody had to wear it because they didn't stop at this one shawl they created, the first piece. They created a cape after that. Yep, they made a cape. They made a cape and they made a lady wear it, and there are pictures of her. There are pictures of her wearing it, and she looks.
Did they make her wear it, or did they ask her?
I don't know if they personally did. I assume she was some kind of model.
I'm sure.
There are pictures of this one particular woman on the internet wearing this spider silk cape. She looks very serious. She looks very regal. But, you know, in every photograph, she's thinking, "You get this miracle of nature off my skin."
I'm looking at it right now, and
Do you see what I'm saying?
She seems to have this same sort of expression of disdain that most fashion models are told to cultivate. I'm not saying that they have disdain.
Like, you're not good enough to wear this.
Yeah. You know what? I can't read the expression any more beyond that.
Well, if she's out there listening, you can write into us and tell us what it was like to wear that spider cape.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah. It's a very specific call out there, but okay, sure.
So spider silk has amazing properties, but this project shows how difficult it is to mass produce useful amounts of it. I mean, obviously, we're going to have trouble coming up with 1 million spiders every time you want to make a pair of socks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So clearly getting spiders to make this silk for us is not the most practical approach, especially if we want to talk about mass production, right?
Right.
Especially for something like clothing, which I do want to point out. This was a viewer question from YouTube, actually. Mr. Richard Miller, and I mentioned the full name because that is his full YouTube name.
Uh-huh.
Asked us about this on YouTube in our video about biomimetics. So thank you so much for writing that question in, Richard.
Yeah. So spider silk from spiders, probably not the practical solution.
Not feasible at all. But again, as we said, very useful. So is there a way we can make useful amounts of spider silk or something very much like spider silk without milking 1 million spiders?
Well, we're working on it. The short answer at this very current point in time is not really. But, all right, so some researchers have created spider silk from silkworms. They genetically engineered the silkworms, which produce hella more silk than spiders do, to create stuff that is not quite as strong as actual spider silk. It's sort of a hybrid between the two.
Interesting.
Still pretty cool.
So this way you get the benefit of being able to produce the silk without the concern of the producers eating one another at the end of every day.
Yeah.
Or biting you.
Right. Okay, that's fair.
and more silk than you would from the spiders overall. Fewer silkworms or spiders involved, yes. You can also code bacteria to create spider silk. Well,
whoa, bacteria?
Bacteria. Well, they're not creating the silk. There's a few steps in this process here. First, you take and or engineer a gene that encodes the production of spider silk proteins. Okay, then you pop that gene into some easily programmable bacteria, like, for example, E. coli.
It's nasty, but it's one of those that we know a lot about.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. You can just kind of scrape out part of its genetic code and be like, here, instead of doing this other thing, we want you to produce this protein. Then you muss about with the bacteria's metabolism to give it the right building blocks to create the silk proteins. And bam, you've got wee little silk factories.
Crazy. Yay. But okay, wait a minute. That just sounds like that would leave you with the protein, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's the first part. Once you've got this raw protein material, you need to purify it into silk fiber and then spin the fibers into the actual tensile silk strands. Part of this involves stretching the fiber to align its molecules, which is possibly best done using a mechanical actuator, which is like a little spider silk taffy pull.
I didn't think it was possible for me to get more disturbed as this podcast went on. And yet somehow it's, and I don't even find spiders to be that icky or anything, but this is weird.
We
I mean, it's
start
awesome.
Start with Tim Curry from Legend Spider and we just go downhill from
well,
there.
Well, that's all right. I'm sure that it's going to turn around and by the end of this, I'm just going to be singing the praises of spiders.
Well, are you ready for something really silly?
Sure, hit me with it.
What if instead of spider silk, we used spiber silk?
So we flipped the D around?
Yeah.
That's essentially the process.
What is spiber silk?
So one of the companies that's working with bacteria to create spider silk is called Spiber.
The B being for
S-P-I-B-E-R.
Yeah.
So the B being for bacteria, I would imagine.
Or something. But they're talking. They've got these grand plans. They're talking about like building cars out of spider silk.
Shut up.
And
I'm a little skeptical of that.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. Like over on Tech Stuff, we recently did a pair of episodes about carbon fiber, and it's really impressive stuff. It's some like 66% lighter than steel, but five times as strong. Mm-hmm. And Spiber is claiming that their artificial spider silk, maybe as strong as steel and lighter even than carbon fiber.
Okay. All right. So, and of course, lighter cars means that the engine has to work less to mm-hmm. move the car. So it ends up being a more efficient vehicle in the grand scheme of things.
Okay. Now, I want to apologize and back off on my skepticism a little. Obviously, I guess they're not talking about making every part of the car out of spider.
No. Okay. I imagine like the engine would still be made of engine.
Right, but some parts of it would be made of
the body, the chassis.
Okay.
Probably.
Chassis. It's.
Why do I never pronounce that correctly? I go through like nine
well,
different pronunciations
not,
in my head, and none of them are
spelled the way it's pronounced. So, but yeah, no, the chassis, the body of the car, like those elements would be made out of this spider silk material. We talk about when you talk about carbon fiber, you're not really talking about a body that's made out of fibers. You're talking about a reinforced material that has these fibers that produce that that resiliency and decrease in weight as well. So same sort of thing, I would imagine.
You're also talking about using fibers to spin a cloth and then reinforcing that cloth with a resin, which I imagine is the process that they are imagining.
Right. It sets it into a specific shape and then it does not move out of that shape. You know, you can apply heat or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's gonna retain the shape that you gave it due to the resins that you've added in the process.
Okay, so is there anything else we can use to make artificial spider fiber other than spider bacteria?
Oh, yeah. Plants, tobacco, and alfalfa in particular seem like decent candidates for growing this protein.
Wow.
Okay.
Or, hey, goats.
Of course.
Mean
Of course.
You mean goats?
I mean goats. I mean...
If Goat Simulator has taught me nothing, it's taught me that a goat's tongue is at least as sticky as a spider web.
Wait, this is goats with a T, not gobes.
Not gobes.
No, okay. No, that's not goat bacteria. We're talking about goats.
Okay.
All right, so you guys might actually remember this one from the headlines of the internet. Some researchers introduced this gene that, you know, encodes the production of spider silk proteins into the sequence that goats use to create their milk. So you milk your transgenic goat, and then you isolate out the silk proteins, and then you use those to create your silk.
Meanwhile, your goat never stops screaming and having nightmares the rest of its life.
The goats reportedly were otherwise normal, happy goats.
Well, and to be fair, we're talking about proteins that you then have to process in order to get the silk. You're not actually milking a goat and spider silk is coming
out. No,
no,
no.
I would never stop screaming.
It's not a spider goat. Yeah, that's what I assumed upon first read, and that's not how it's working.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Because I don't want spider goats at all, okay? As fuzzy.
Swinging from skyscrapers
by their udders.
Yeah. Okay, I really find this equally awesome and amazing and a little...
Strange.
Strange, and I don't know that disturbing is the right word. It's just so unusual. Like, it's amazing to me that people have come up with these ideas and been able to implement them and not turn out to be some sort of supervillain. That's the amazing part to me.
Jonathan, I advise you to get used to what's weird.
Okay.
Because reality is weird.
That's true.
And it's just getting weirder.
Yeah, and we're not done yet.
Let's hit me with the next one.
The future is weirder than you can possibly imagine.
Hit me with the next one. Oh, well, you know what? I know this next one because this is what I talked about in the video. The idea of studying spider webs to see what keeps them anchored to other surfaces in a really sturdy way.
Right. So this is not just the material properties of the silk itself, but here we're sort of looking at the architectural properties, the more macro architectural properties of the webs and the discs they use to attach webs to surfaces.
Right. So it's an interesting question. It's one that you don't necessarily think about, but occasionally it pays to think about things like, what makes sticky things sticky? What makes glue sticky? What is it ultimately that creates that bond that's making things stick together? And there are different answers depending upon what material you're looking at. But this is one of those things that, you know, we kind of take for granted, right? We're just, glue is sticky. But why? Well, in this case, the spider silk, the reason why it's these attachment discs are so strong and resilient and able to hold a web in place is due to the geometry of those little discs. It's actually, imagine a spider web, like a strand in a spider web as a thread. Mm-hmm. And then think of even thinner threads that are in a particular geometric pattern that are like a staple that are holding that strand in place to whatever surface you're talking about, whether that's a plant or a corner of your house, that kind of thing. And scientists looked very closely at this and realized that this particular geometry and approach was extremely effective, and they wanted to see if perhaps they could copy that. And so they ended up using a synthetic model. They ended up pulling out a filament and then used, an artificial material. This wasn't spider silk at this point, but used the same approach in making these little miniature sort of stitches or staples as an attachment disc, a synthetic one, and it works.
They used electrospinning to create the fibers.
Yes.
Right? So that's where you use electric charge to draw a solid fiber out of a liquid.
Right. And in this case, it's an extremely thin fiber, but using even thinner fibers to attach it to another surface. And, you know, right now, there aren't a ton of practical applications for it, but there are potential practical applications for this kind of approach, including using it in the medical field for things like binding broken bones together, where you can stitch them together with this stuff, and it could make the healing process much faster for certain mm-hmm. kinds of injuries, which I thought was, now that's amazing. So I really was excited when I read about this, and this is a fairly recent study that was published. So that's what kind of inspired the whole video in the first place.
Yeah, that I do think that's really cool for biomedical adhesives or even just stronger industrial adhesives. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always a good reason to make something real sticky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I think there are a lot of other really cool uses of spider silk and just spider technology in general. One that I found was about water collection. You ever seen a spider web outside stretch between two branches after it's rained or when it's dewy in the morning? And
yeah,
it's hanging
droplets.
With droplets. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of beautiful. Or like when that happens and then there's a sudden freeze and you get a frozen spider web.
See, I love it because it means I'm less likely to walk through them. Because like in the video, that's usually my experience of suddenly becoming a ninja master.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. flailing my arms around. Everyone else just thinks I'm having some sort of crazy fit, but it's just that I've walked through a spider web.
Yeah. Well, there's actually something to that, to this water retention property, and we think that it might actually be useful. So in 2009, a group of Chinese scientists published findings in the journal Nature about the properties of spider silk with regard to water. So spider webs are very good at collecting water from the air based on tiny changes in the structure of the silk in the presence of moisture.
Huh.
So they have all these little tiny fibers sort of poking out from the main dragline silk, and those can change their shape with response to water. And what that ends up doing is collecting lots of water along the length of the web. So there is debate about whether the water collecting ability of the web is actually a trait that's been selected for, like whether that's something the spiders want and that's giving them a survival advantage, or whether it's just kind of a side effect of
right.
what webs do anyway. We
right.
don't really know for sure which one it is.
Of course, for the practical application, that's moot.
Right. So
yeah,
in any case, yeah, the researchers were able to create artificial structures that mimicked the water collecting properties of the spider webs. And it's worth noting that something like this could be really useful in basically any situation where moisture is precious or where it would be advantageous to collect moisture from the air, say, in a very dry climate.
Hmm. Right. Cool. And then there is this other story that I like, the idea of using spider web technology to make windows safer for birds. You know, one of the, I don't know, I'm sure we've all had the experience of hearing a bird collide with a glass, pane of glass.
It happened during my very first job interview ever. It was very upsetting for everyone involved.
Yeah, that leaves an impression that literally.
I mean, certainly on the bird.
Certainly. Yeah, it's very sad, actually. And I, you know, I've seen this happen a few times myself. I am a soft-hearted person. So for me, it's immediately a blow.
A little bit traumatizing.
And I mean, obviously for the bird as well. So one way to potentially head that off is to incorporate some reflective material inside the window that is reflective to birds, but not reflective to human beings. You see, spider webs reflect ultraviolet light, which birds are able to see, but we can't. It's one of those reasons why if we're walking toward a spider web and the strands are thin enough, we may not notice it and walk right into it. But birds are not going to do that. They're going to see the reflection of ultraviolet light, assuming that there's a light source shining in that area. So that means that if you were able to incorporate a similar approach and move some ultraviolet material, reflective material, into the material of the window itself, you can make it visible to birds while still remaining practically invisible to humans. From what I understand, most of the glass panes that are made this way, if you're really close and you're looking at it from different angles, you can sort of see where that those patterns have been made in the glass, because mm-hmm. it's not like it's a solid pane of ultraviolet reflective material. It's more like a pattern that birds can see and thus, you know, veer away from in time instead of colliding with that pane of glass. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was really cool too. Just this idea of, hey, you know, why don't birds fly into webs more frequently? Aha, here's the reason why. How about we incorporate that into the design of stuff we make?
Hmm. There's lots more things that we can do with spider stuff. I mean, you know, so it turns out that that protein that I was talking about earlier, if you use that to create a powder, it can go in stuff like shampoos and cosmetics to make your skin and hair feel smoother. That is currently in use today. Joe, you are making a really terrific face in response to that.
When I want to feel fresh and smooth, I rub spiders over every inch of my body.
This is sounding more and more like it's a Dr. Weird segment at the beginning of an Aqua Teen Hunger Force cartoon.
Or related to the biomedical properties that Jonathan was talking about earlier, you can use it to help heal wounds. Spider silk has, in fact, traditionally, historically, been used as kind of a wound covering in the field.
Interesting.
You can coat implants with it, which will hypothetically reduce the body's immune reaction to them.
So you could reduce the chances of your body rejecting something.
Uh-huh. Or use it to use spider silk to manufacture artificial tendons.
Wow.
You know, good and springy and,
oh, yeah.
And again.
The, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And hey, its conductivity of heat, as it turns out, is similar to that of copper, but it's only 1/7 as dense. So it could be really useful in like heat exchange systems like HVACs or electronics or cookware.
Yeah, I actually read about that you might be able to use spider silk to cool your computer in the future.
You know, this is really amazing stuff. And it's why we wanted to specifically focus on spiders, because while biomimetics in general is a fascinating field.
Huge and fascinating field.
Just the fact that spider silk has provided so much inspiration is a great example of why it's important for us to pursue all levels of science, not just engineering or biology, but, you know, everything, because they feed off of one another. So, yeah, we're glad that we were able to dedicate a couple of episodes to this. I'm sure we'll return back to it because it's impossible to, you know, just say, oh, well, over and done. Let's move on. Because I think biology will continue to be a source of inspiration, and we'll see other examples that will need to be talked about. So if you guys out there have any examples you think we should chat about in future episodes, or perhaps there's just some other topic that you really would like us to tackle, let us know. You can let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. Our handle at all three is FWThinking. We look forward to hearing from you, and you'll hear from us again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.